This is the Rocky Mountain Review Podcast. I am your co-host, Gabe Peterson.
And I'm your other co-host, Julia Battalese. This is the Rocky Mountain Review, the live news show that airs 4 to 5, Tuesday and Thursday, on KCSU that has turned into a podcast. And this is what you missed this week. And welcome to the Rocky Mountain Review. I am Julia Battalese. I'm in here with my co-host, Gabe Peterson.
How's it going?
Not bad. We also have J.D. Layton, our national news correspondent.
I definitely tripped over a trash can walking in here.
At least you made it in.
You say walked. You were sprinting.
There was some hustle.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure after that I went, dude!
Dude!
And we have Raven Culler, our reporter that does interviews.
Yeah, that's me.
Figure it out. We need to sit down with Raven and figure it out.
Chief interviewer reporter?
Let's just call her.
Laugh.
Yeah.
So,
anyways.
So uncomfortable.
So we have a great show for you guys today. We'll start with our local segment and then move into sports. We have a couple of local stories, such as Colorado colleges and high school students and the walkout that happened earlier today. We have an NBA agent that had a fatal crash in Colorado. A murder that happened earlier this summer has been convicted, and Larry U. Stacy. Then we move into national, and we will have an explosion in Leicester. We have flooding somewhere in the nation. China is trying to kind of tweak some term limits out there, and West Virginia walkouts. And then we will have our music segment with our very own Mimi Hibben, our news director.
Our music director.
Music director.
She's not a news
She's
director.
She's not the news.
So it's just so important to me. The news
you.
Is so important. I know. And then we will have our weed segment with Dylan, and finally our roundtable with Nick Baker, our sports director.
Yep.
And he will be coming on to talk about Larry U. Stacy.
Yeah, because some stuff happened with that recently.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get straight into local news. I'm going to send it over to Raven.
Great. In a tweet sent out on February 24th by Administration CSU, future Rams were assured that administration admission decisions will be unaffected if they are to face any disciplinary actions for demonstrating peaceful protest. Part of the tweet said, quote, CSU will continue to support students who choose to have an active voice in their community. Other Colorado universities, such as University of Colorado, University of Denver, and Regis University, have made similar statements regarding the right to peaceful protest and admission decisions, according to CBS Denver. High school students across Colorado and the nation have been planning walkout protests to show support for the victims and students at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. The support for the Colorado University came in response to some high schoolers from the country threatening to discipline their high schools from around the country threatening to discipline their students for walking out to join peaceful protests by suspending them, which is something that needs to be reported on college applications, according to Denver 7. Today, high school, middle school, and elementary students throughout Fort Collins have walked out of their classes to demonstrate peaceful protest in Old Town Square. When asked for a statement, Fort Collins High School Principal Mark Eversole said, quote, "We recognize the school shooting 2 weeks ago had a significant impact on students across the nation. In times of crisis, most people want to do something to make a difference. Freedom of speech and the right to peaceful protest are among our nation's most cherished traditions, and through civic engagement, our youth develop the ability needed for citizenship in our democracy." End quote. Dr. Carrie Pitzel of the CSU History Department was also interviewed by reporter Katie Otter.
Yep, and we're actually going to go into that really quick. You're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
So what are your thoughts on the students who were walking out of their high school classes in Fort Collins today?
Personally, I support them, and I think that their lives are on the line, and the adults have failed them. And I think that it's really inspiring that young people are taking control of this issue and demanding change and taking a stand. And professionally, as a historian, I think they're part of a long line of movements that are led by young people. We saw that in the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. We saw it in the anti-war movements in the 1960s. So I think that there's a real precedence for this, and I am so inspired and hopeful and overwhelmed by their bravery.
I agree. So would you have done the same thing if you were a high school student during these times?
I'd like to think that I would. I think none of us know until we get into these moments. You know, they are young people. They may have authority figures in their lives, teachers or principals or even parents saying, you shouldn't be doing this, and that can be a really scary thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, I can imagine it's a lot scarier for them to worry about gunmen coming into their schools. So I'd like to think that I would have had this kind of bravery when I was that age.
Mm. You kind of already touched on this, but what is the impact of young students using their voice to incite change?
I think it can be huge. I think that if this is sustained, I think that it can be huge. I think that in recent years, there's been a new wave of activism in this country with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the Women's March, and sort of a revival of feminism and protest, particularly against the current administration. So I think that these young people are riding a wave. I think that there is momentum for change. And I think that this represents, I suspect and I hope, a turning point in this conversation about gun culture and gun control and violence. It seems like that there is a real potential for things to change now, especially with the 2018 and 2020 elections coming up.
And all these kids are going to be, you know, voting in them.
Yes, so hopefully, yeah, yes. Hopefully. Yes. So.
This interview was done by Katie Otter, and you're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review.
Moving on, longtime NBA agent Dan Fagan was killed in Aspen, Colorado on Sunday. According to Colorado State Patrol, Fagan was driving an SUV when he tried to merge onto the highway and was hit by a commuter bus. The SUV had two other occupants, Fagan's 5-year-old son and a 29-year-old woman from California. They were airlifted to Denver in serious condition, and no one on the bus was injured. Fagan's family came out with a statement saying, "Today we lost a great man, father, son, and brother, who always stood up not only for his clients, but also for what he knew was right. We are all shocked and saddened by this tragic development and appreciate the outpouring of support. The family has requested privacy at this time." According to the Chicago Tribune, Fagan was among the NBA's most powerful agents, one known for aggressive tactics when negotiating on behalf of his clients. In recent years, he reportedly began cutting back on his professional obligations to spend more time with his son. During his years as an agent, Fagan represented players such as John Wall, Dwight Howard, DeMarcus Cousins. In 2000, Fagan was on Forbes magazine of top agents. The NBA sent their condolences, saying that the NBA family mourns the loss of longtime agent Dan Fagan, and that they send thoughts and prayers to his family.
Yeah, moving on. So Jeffrey Etheridge will serve a life sentence in jail after being convicted for the murder of 23-year-old Helena Hoffman, the Coloradoan reports. Etheridge attacked and murdered Hoffman in the early morning of June 21st on her way home from her late-night work shift at McDonald's. The Coloradoan reports that Etheridge videotaped himself assaulting and manipulating Hoffman's body on his cell phone. Etheridge struck a plea deal in January that would prevent him from being sentenced to death, reports the Coloradoan, but as of yesterday, he will now be serving a life sentence. Bailiffs led Etheridge out of the courtroom, and as he turned back and said, "God bless you guys," before the door closed behind him, according to the court translator report. And for our final local story, I'm going to send that over to you, Julia.
Thanks. Since the last walkout in 1990, West Virginia teachers are walking out again, and for their fourth day in a row. 55 counties have been said to be involved as teachers in the state attempt to earn better salaries, as West Virginia is considered to be one of the worst states in America for their income, reports the AP. Teachers in West Virginia on average get paid about $45,000 a year. Roughly 20,000 teachers and 13,000 school service employees started their protest on Thursday. Sarah Jorgensen and Joe Sterling from CNN report that the walkout began after Governor Jim Justice signed legislation to allow a 2% pay increase that would start in July with a 1% pay increase over a 2-year period. To a crowd outside the Capitol, president of the American Federation of Teachers in West Virginia, Christine Campbell, told the rally of school officials on Monday, quote, "We are ready. We are willing. We stand on the right side of public education by being back here and outside our schools tomorrow." And that is going to wrap up local news, but I am going to send it over to Gabe. He is going to step in for Bjorn Larson today for sports.
Yeah, interim sports reporter, so that's awesome. Anyways, going on to CSU golf, the Colorado State's men's golf team started its spring schedule with a disappointing finish in the National Invitation Tournament on Monday, as they managed to just a top eight finish after finishing top five in every tournament previously this season. The Rams were led by sophomore A.J. Ott and freshman Parathakorn Suyasri as they both tied at 6-under after the second round. That put the team 17 shots behind first place UNLV, and the Rams didn't have enough fire to close that gap. The men will have a long layover until they begin to play at Lambkin Grips San Diego Classic on March 12th, hosted by the University of San Diego and San Diego State. Moving on to CSU tennis. The CSU tennis team spent the weekend in Des Moines, Iowa, for a back-to-back tournament against Western Illinois and Drake. The team was played perfectly and went undefeated. They began the weekend with a 4-1 win over Western Illinois and kept that momentum going into the next day, where they also beat Drake 4-1. Head coach Jared Camerata had this to say about the weekend. Quote, "We've learned a lot about what we're good at and where we need to improve. Now we are excited to come home and play in front of our great fans." The Rams will finally head back home to the CSU Tennis Complex this weekend to compete in two matches, hosting Omaha on Saturday and Presbyterian on Sunday. Finally, for sports, we have CSU wrestling. The Colorado State Club wrestling team won its first conference title under their new head coach last weekend at the National Collegiate Wrestling Association Great Plains Conference Tournament. CSU had 11 wrestlers finish on the podium, including four champions, qualifying them for the NCAA Division II Nationals. The men will be joined by the two teams' female wrestlers, juniors Camela Sanchez and Kendall Davis, who already qualified. The men's team was led by Louis Romero Jr., Taylor DeWall, Colin Says, and Maxwell First. Quote, "We all know we had something special early in the season," said head coach Kendall DeJong. He also said that the wrestlers and coaches have put in the work to get better all season, and the results speak for themselves. The 13 national qualifiers will begin their trek to a national championship on March 8th through the 10th in Allen, Texas. And that will wrap up sports.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah, so shout out to the CSU wrestling team.
Yeah, it sounds like they killed it.
Yeah, first time all year. But anyways, I think we're going to take a quick break here at the Rocky Mountain Review. When we come back, we are going to jump into our national and global news, as well as our music segment with our very own Mimi Hibben.
Yeah,
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. You're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review, only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
For just a few commercials a day, you can keep KCSU running.
KCSU is actually commercial-free radio. We don't need commercials.
And welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I am Julia Battalese. I'm one of two co-hosts here. I'm here with my co-host, Gabe Peterson.
Hello.
We also have national news correspondent, J.D. Layton.
Yes, I didn't trip on a trash can entering the studio this time.
I'm very happy for you. You're moving up in the world.
I know.
We also have Raven Culler, our reporter.
Yep.
Yep.
That's me.
And then we also have Mimi Hibben in the studio. She'll be coming on here in just like about 5 to 10 minutes to talk about her music segment, which I believe... it's a rap segment, I believe. I don't know why.
Wow.
I sound so sad about that.
That was...
I just forget what the title was, and so now I felt sad. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
All right, I'm going to send it over to JD for our first national story.
An explosion has rocked the city of Leicester, leading to the deaths of 5 people, reports Lydia of the UK Independent. The explosion occurred at 7 p.m. on Sunday night and destroyed the shop and flat combination in what authorities called a pancake collapse. 5 additional people have been hospitalized as a result of the explosion, with one sustaining serious life-threatening injuries. Authorities do not yet know the cause of the devastating explosion, but do not believe it to be linked to terrorism. However, they are currently investigating the cause of the blast as they sift through the rubble of the building. A neighbor of the collapsed building, Tony Hartley, was one of the first to respond to the site and had this to say about the explosion. "We turned round, saw rubble, and heard a little boy crying. There was me and another bloke sifting through the rubble, and we managed to pull the little boy out." And now we're going to hit some flooding stories. The Midwest was pummeled this weekend by inclement weather, with at least 12 tornadoes touching down and at least a foot of rain, reports Daniel Monzo of ABC News. The heavy rainfall has caused major concerns for flooding from Louisiana to Michigan, with the Kentucky, Indiana, Missouri, and Ohio governors issuing states of emergency, and another storm is expected to hit the south central U.S. on Wednesday, adding to the already flood-prone rivers. The flooding has caused at least three deaths in the Midwest and causing severe flood damage, reports Amir Vera of CNN. The Louisville, Kentucky sewer district reports they have pumped at least over 21 billion gallons of standing rainwater out of the city.
Wow.
That is a lot. That is a lot of water.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you very much, JD, but we're going to send it over to Raven for our final national story.
The leading party in China announced Sunday that they will introduce a measure that would eliminate constitutional presidential term limits, allowing President Xi Jinping to rule indefinitely. The National People's Congress is likely to pass the measure and grant Xi a second term during their annual session next month, reports the Associated Press. This move is in accordance with an international trend of strongman leaders, putting Xi in the company of Vladimir Putin of Russia, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt, and Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey, said Stephen Lee Meyer of the New York Times. Even without term limits, Xi is considered to be the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao Zedong, and concerns have come up both in the international arena and in short-lived dissension on the Chinese internet that he will become an imperial leader. The Communist Party has not commented on the purpose of eliminating term limits, but political analysts believe that Xi wishes to push through his agenda to end corruption and insubordination against the state and to make China the world leader in the modern era. The author of The China Fantasy, James Mann, told Jane Perlez and Javier Hernandez of the New York Times that while American presidents from the past likely would have condemned Xi for weakening democracy, Trump likely will not. Mann said that Trump rarely voices strong reverence for constitutional restrictions and even went as far as to say that Trump is probably jealous of Xi. The Global Times, a newspaper published by the Communist Party, said that, quote, outside forces were trying to challenge the party's leadership. Internet censors in China have been working overtime to eliminate any satirical criticism of Xi, many portraying him as a power-hungry Mao-esque figure.
Thanks, Raven.
So that's fun.
Thank you, Raven. That will conclude our national segment. So we have Mimi here now to talk about the music segment.
She's here.
Say hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mimi, and I'm one of the two music directors here at KCSU, and I'm very excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually really excited. So this rap, like, there's like four of them. I wanted to say a trio, but it's not a trio. I'm so used to saying a rap trio because there's normally not four rappers in a rap group. Mm-hmm. But they're really cool and they're pretty young and they're called SOBRBE. And they just came out with a new album called Gangin, and it's about 15 tracks. And so the group consists of four members. SOB stands for Strictly Only Brothers, and RBE stands for Real Boy Entertainment. They have a lot of connections with Mac Dre, which is also really cool, and he's a big influence to them. And they were on the track Paramedic with Kendrick Lamar of the Black Panther album, which kind of blew them up. And it was also really cool because they debuted the track like right before this album just came out. Mm. And they all have completely different sounds, compiling a wide range between melodic and abrasive sounds of rap and overall lyrics. And many rap groups that consist of three or more members are likely to sound overpowering, which is not necessarily taking turns when it comes to rapping bars on the same track. So when you think of like Migos, there's three of them and they all kind of like hype over each other, it's not really fun to listen to all the time. Like, yeah, it can get you hype, but it's not, I don't know, it's not something that you want
to
like
wake up at 10 a.m. and listen.
Yeah, exactly. Narcos. But they don't do that. They like give each other kind of a chance to just like do their own thing, and they all have their own sounds. So each of the members allow one another to share their lyrical expression, creating cohesion throughout the album that doesn't sound excessive or thrown together. And each track is accompanied by all four of the rappers, but allows for a solo from one of the rappers for each one. So each rapper gets like at least a solo during each song, which is cool.
Cool.
And yeah, they're awesome. So if you haven't listened to it, check it out. It's SOBRBE, and their album is called Gangin', and it's pretty good.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What are the acronyms again?
So SOB stands for Strictly Only Brothers.
Okay.
And RBE stands for Real Boy Entertainment.
Oh, I thought it like spelled out like sorbet. Or like
I know,
and
that's how I wanted to read it. Yeah. That's how I wanted to read it as one, but there's an X in the middle, but the X is silent.
Oh, of course it is. Okay.
So if you read about it, they like talk about like why, and it's really interesting. So yeah, so they're cool. I think they're all like mid to late 20s. Mm.
How did you discover this band or this group?
I actually like figured I didn't know anything about them until the Black Panther album came out. And then I saw that they were on the track, that really good track, Paramedic, with Kendrick Lamar. And then I followed them on Spotify, and Spotify notifies you when new albums drop from people that you're following. And they notified me that they came out with a new album. And I was like, oh, I should listen to this. So I listened through the whole thing, and it was pretty good.
Just a banger all the way throughout.
Yeah, just a banger. But it's not. But it's
just a slapper.
It's yeah, kind of. But I mean, it's also stuff that you could just chill to as well.
Cool.
So it's not like hype music the whole time. There are hype songs.
Okay.
But there are also like really, really nice songs. Yeah. So it's good. I love a balance in an album like that.
Yeah,
for sure. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I think that's going to wrap up our music segment. Thanks so much, Mimi, for coming on.
Yeah.
We are going to take a very quick break here at the Rocky Mountain Review. But we will be coming back here in just a second with our weed segment with Dylan Simonson. So, yeah, stay tuned. You're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
Absolute Vapor Lounge in Fort Collins specializes in vape accessories, including e-liquids, batteries, and more. Located on South College Avenue near the Foothills Mall, Absolute Vapor Lounge provides Wi-Fi access, tables, and seating suitable for both your studying and lounging needs. KCSU thanks Absolute Vapor Lounge for their underwriting support.
And welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I am Julia Battalese. I'm one of two co-hosts in here. I am in here with my co-host, Gabe Peterson.
Hello.
And we are in here with Dylan Simonson now. He is our weed reporter expert person.
I like that title. It works for me.
Okay, cool. Very nice.
Cool. We'll just take it away, Dylan.
All right. Well, legalized marijuana and hemp have threatened a lot of different industries as of late. It's speculated that the threat to some industries was why cannabis was made illegal in the first place. Now Molson Coors Brewing Company, which owns the Coors, Miller, and Blue Moon brands, is saying legalized marijuana is a risk factor for its business. Molson Coors is so concerned with legalized marijuana affecting their sales, they even stated that it could be affecting their current sales in their 10K that was published recently, according to The Cannabist. Coors isn't the first beer or liquor company to make this statement. The parent company of Sam Adams has said something similar, and so has the Craft Brew Alliance, according to Fortune. Marijuana wasn't the only risk factor for Molson Coors. In fact, it was only one of over 40 concerns, but the company is going to keep a close eye on the market since the full impact of legalization is currently unknown. Molson Coors and other companies have reason to be worried, though. According to a study by Cannabis Consumer Group, which involved over 40,000 Americans, 27% of beer drinkers are now buying legal cannabis instead of beer, or would if cannabis were legal in their state. As more and more states legalize cannabis, this is a large portion of customers that beer companies are losing. Cannabis states that if cannabis were legalized nationally, it's estimated that the beer industry would lose over $2 billion in retail sales, or about 7% of the beer industry's market. According to Time, states like Washington, Oregon, and here in Colorado have already seen beer sales fall, and Colorado is called the Napa Valley of craft beer, and rightfully so. Just look at Fort Collins, the craft beer capital of Colorado. So the threat is certainly real. Molson Coors has headquarters in Denver and Montreal, and Colorado was the first state to legalize recreational marijuana, and Canada plans on fully legalizing nationwide by July. So its headquarters alone are in two places where there is legalized marijuana, and specifically in two places that are pioneers in marijuana policy change. To help combat this change in dynamic, Molson Coors has begun looking at potential expansion into the marijuana industry as of last November, according to Biz Journals. However, they haven't specified any future plans on expansion, as they don't want to rush into anything and make sure they'll be making a sound investment. Constellation Brands, which owns Corona, Modelo, and Svedka, has already started to invest in the marijuana industry. According to Fortune, they invested around $191 million in the Canadian marijuana company Canopy Growth and hope to eventually make cannabis-infused drinks.
I mean, I guess just kind of listening to that, I mean, obviously the alcohol industry kind of just wants to create, like, monopoly over the marijuana industry. So as I was kind of like listening to you, why don't they just partner up with certain weed companies around the world? I mean, that's obviously the best thing to do if they're trying to monopolize the market.
Yeah,
and just try and keep alcohol the number one seller.
I feel like a good PR move for them too would to be like, we go to local places, and they could even go to like local places here in Fort Collins.
Yeah,
like that's a big thing, you know, and that's why Constellation Brands was like, you know, hey, let's just partner up with these guys, you know, let's invest in them. Whereas Coors wants to, you know, they like owning everything. They're trying to buy up all the craft beer markets and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, alcohol kills people, and it is very addictive, and it is a disease that certain people get. And, you know, you can smoke weed and become lackadaisical, and you can become just kind of like a couch potato, but at the same time it's not harming your liver, and it's not something that I personally think that you can be addicted to. And with alcohol, I mean, so, I don't know, I guess who cares if alcohol sales are going down? They're going to go from a multi-billion dollar corporation to maybe like a $2 billion corporation. I mean, I just don't understand why that they're so upset by that.
You know, it's just because people are greedy, they like money.
It's true.
From the perspective of an economist, weed appears to be a substitute for alcohol, and that's really threatening to the profit maximizers and almost monopolistic like environment that these big breweries are entering in. Because like you said, they're purchasing up a lot of smaller breweries because they definitely threaten their market base, and if you can already control that. But with weed, you can't necessarily do that, especially given the sort of weird legal status it's in. So it's this very scary threat for them, especially coming in, as it's like, oh, yeah, some people would rather have edibles rather than a nice beer or something like that. So it's like
kind of going off another like economical standpoint. One of the major companies and businesses that always thrive through depressions or through recessions are liquor stores and bars. So it's not like alcohol is going to go anywhere. I mean, maybe some people are just like, you know, I got to work tomorrow morning. Maybe I'll just get high and go to the bars. Like maybe that could very possibly be a thing. And I think it is a thing because, you know, I've seen and know people that do that kind of stuff. And it's, I mean, it is threatening to the industry, but at the same time, I would just say to the core CEO, who cares? you're already a multimillionaire. Your company's always going to thrive. You have the Miller Lite, you have the Blue Moon. I mean, Coors doesn't even like associate, like put Coors Brewing on the Blue Moon beers because they don't want people to know. So it's just like always just like they're always just trying to make money, and it is the greed, and it is unfortunate. But at the same time, just start partnering up with local groweries or dispensaries, and just maybe start like saying like, oh, we endorse this, but make sure that, you know, you started out by drinking a beer first or buying a six pack. Yeah. Or, I mean, maybe they raise their prices too. I mean, what's a Coors six pack? Probably $8, $9 or something. Maybe just
feel like
just
I was
raise
gonna say
it.
That seems expensive because that's what I pay for craft.
Yeah, oh, I was gonna okay. say I was like I don't think you pay that much for a six pack of Coors.
I don't know. I just know what a 30 rack costs because I don't really buy it. Like,
that's what I was gonna say because I was gonna be like, I feel like no one buys like a six pack of Coors because I feel like they generally get the giant pack.
I would say
about
more adults
to drink them all
do.
Quickly.
More adults do. Like after work,
yeah.
just
real
go
adults,
buy six
grown, but not that grown.
Dads.
Well, maybe Coors Light. Maybe Coors could just start implementing like the Keystone Light. Is Keystone Light owned by Coors Brewing Company.
Oh, gosh.
I think it might be.
I think it is, actually.
So never mind.
Right? Because there's two fairly large brewing companies. There's Anheuser-Busch, and then there's the Coors Company. Yeah. And then there's some foreign company that owns a bunch of other ones, too.
I think is it Heineken?
Yeah, it's Heineken. Yeah. So those are like the three big...
Molson Coors Brewing.
Yeah, owns Keystone. Okay, I was just going to say to start throwing Coors in a 30 rack, but obviously they've already kind of figured that out with the Keystone.
Exactly.
So
they got that on lock.
I don't know, but I mean, if you're going to sell 30 beers for $15, maybe just start raising it to $20 and you're going to see your profits come back.
Exactly.
But then you might lose some business, like with us. You know, we'll just go buy a Genesee or we'll go buy some Rainier or something like that. Just like the gross beers.
Sip Canadian Light more than I would ever want to pay for like more expensive natty.
That's true.
I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
Wow, I'm just the complete opposite here. I buy the expensive stuff.
Yeah,
I bang for your buck. I prefer craft over non-craft any given day.
Any day.
It's gone a little off of weed.
I've never even heard of
it. It's just the substance segment.
Yeah, exactly. We're all right. But anyways, I've never even heard of this topic before, that alcohol companies are actually threatened and concerned by the growing industry.
It definitely makes sense, though.
Yeah,
just
it does.
Because, like,
recreational, like, substance.
Yep. Well, I feel like if you use them at the same time, too, then you don't need to drink as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you definitely
do. So
yeah,
it's like you can kind of get both of them and be fine.
But tying it back to the economics, that would assume that they're complements and that people consume them together, which isn't necessarily true, as you know, we've kind of gone over.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's different. Like, personally, me, it doesn't affect me if I, like, consume both at the same time. But I know people that, you know, they're even around marijuana while they're drinking, and they just over the edge.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's a bad night for them all of a sudden. So, you know, that's another reason that these two don't really want to mesh is because of the stigma against, you know, combining the two. Like, and then, like, here in Colorado, we can't have medicated alcohol like they can in California that has medicated wine, beer. We can't legally sell that here.
Huh.
Yeah.
Why not? Is it just because, like, the regulations
just state laws,
for Colorado? Oh,
yeah.
Just state laws?
California doesn't care. Like, I've wanted to go there and try some, like, medicated wine that they have for
so medicated
so long.
As in, like, do
yeah,
they have, like, THC
yeah,
or, like,
THC.
CBD or anything?
No, CBD is legal here. You can buy CBD-infused beer. It's few and far between. I know, like, Lagunitas.
Lagunitas?
Yeah,
my favorite beer.
Yeah,
really?
They have a CBD-infused beer.
They do?
Yeah, they do. I'm not sure if it's sold here in Colorado. I haven't seen it, but I know that they've made one.
Huh. Well,
so,
I'll have to stop by Campus West after the show.
You know, exactly. I want to see it. I want that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess marijuana is a threat because, I mean, I think marijuana is even a threat to the tobacco industry, and the tobacco industry and alcohol aren't classified. I mean, if marijuana is going to be classified as a class one drug with heroin and all these other harsh drugs that'll kill you, smoking will kill you quicker than all of those, and alcohol can probably kill you in a weekend if you overconsumed all of that. So it is a big threat, and it is, I'm glad you brought that to the show, Dylan, because I've never even heard that conversation being had before.
Yeah, it was a really interesting piece to me. I know that I've seen stuff about it before, but I hadn't seen it at this, you know, level or degree of, you know, such a big brewery making a statement and putting it into their 10K. And I would assume that would transfer over to their, you know, quarterly and their yearly. I don't remember what they're called.
So what? So if it really is like driving down sales, do you think, like, because Coors has been here for, God, probably, I don't know the exact dates, but probably close to 100 years in Colorado.
It's almost 100 years
ago.
So,
I mean, could they possibly move over a state to Nebraska or Nevada or Idaho and maybe move out of this state for a little bit?
I mean, there would be potential for that, I'd assume, but, you know, A, that's going to be expensive, and B, their markets are going to be smaller out there, period.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you can't have Coors of the Rockies in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
you're
kind of like producer.
Yeah, can't get that Rocky Mountain water.
Cores of the cornfields. God, that's a tongue twister. Say that three times fast.
I feel like it's not as cool as the Rockies.
No, definitely not.
Sounds like a great parody horror movie, though.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Children of the Corn, Cores of the Corn. Anything else you got to say, Dylan?
You know, that's all I've come up with, unless you guys have more questions for me.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much, Dylan. Yeah.
All right, well, we are going to go on a really quick break here, but we will be returning in just a second. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review, only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
not sure what to do?
Nope.
Listen to KCSU?
Yep.
Are we a bunch of scrubs?
Nope.
Music's in our blood?
Yep.
Lazy?
Nope.
Got new stuff going on daily?
Yep.
Nothing up our sleeve?
Nope.
We're still commercial free?
Yep.
Are we a bunch of saps?
Nope.
We're on the Radio FX app?
Yep.
You know you can't forget about the website?
Nope.
It's got a lot of cool content, right?
Yep.
Want me to stop with the good news?
Nope.
We got new podcasts on iTunes?
Yep.
Nobody really likes CU?
Nope.
Stay tuned for sports news and interviews?
Yep.
Everybody has choices. Make the right one. Listen to 90.5 KCSU.
And welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I am Julia Battalese, one of two co-hosts. I'm in here with my co-host, Gabe Peterson.
Hello.
I'm in here with my national news correspondent, J.D. Layton.
Howdy.
And Raven Culler, our reporter.
Awesome, yeah. Reporter.
Reporter, but like in all caps.
Yes. Yeah.
So that it looks louder and more important. So you actually went to the walkout that happened today, right?
I did, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit of what that looked like today?
Yeah, sure. So I got there at about noon. So they had volunteers from Vote Now Colorado and the Democratic Party who were kind of there keeping an eye on stuff and registering kids to vote who are over the age of 16. Hot tip, if you're 16, you can register to vote.
Hot tip.
Yeah.
That is. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you.
So they were kind of doing some training when I got there, and there were a couple of students there. And I think kids really started to pour in around 12:30-ish. By my estimation, by the time it hit 1, there were maybe 1,500 students there.
Hmm. Where did this take place?
It was Old Town Square.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised at how much organization they did. The whole thing was set up by high school students. Their kind of main spokesperson that I talked to, I believe she said she is a 16-year-old student at Pooter.
It's crazy.
And they did a lot of, they had some planning going on. They did a 17-minute moment of silence.
Mm.
And then, you know, obviously there were hundreds, thousands of people there with signs and all that fun stuff. And it was just kind of really cool to see all the energy. A lot of them were, I spoke to some kids who were as young as like 11.
Really?
Who'd come here from their middle schools and were really excited to be there and had stuff to say. And they had a lot of energy. And then kind of towards the end, when people started filing out, there was a counter-protest group who were more pro-guns. And I spoke to someone who was part of that protest, and they just really felt like they were experiencing hate coming off of that protest and wanted to talk about other solutions to gun violence in schools.
Hmm.
And I think the most interesting thing that I saw the entire time I was there was maybe the protest ended at 2, their permit ended at 2.
Yeah.
And kind of towards the maybe 2:15-ish, most people had cleared out, but there was a small group of some of the adults who had been there to watch and observe, who were more the pro-gun regulation people, and then a couple of the people who had been there with the counter-protest. And they sat and talked to each other for maybe a half an hour. They were still going at it when I left, and they sat there and they were discussing solutions and, you know, how it operates in Congress. And I thought that was really interesting because a lot of the people I talked to, especially the organizers, commented on how the kids wanted to do this whole thing so that they could talk about gun legislation, talk about how kids can be safe and how their representatives hadn't really protected them. And I thought it was interesting to see that, you know, even with two groups that so strongly opposed each other, they were able to sit down and have a conversation, and there was no violence and not really any yelling or anything like that. So
that's really cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Peaceful protest. That's awesome. That's the whole point of them. That's why they're legal and you're allowed to do them.
So you said, the youngest you saw there was 11.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too.
There were some kids. Obviously, there were some parents who had brought kids. I saw one or two kids who were like 1 year old. And then I talked to two kids who were there with their mother. One of them was 5 and the other one was 8. But their mom had kind of brought them along. And they did know what they were there for. I talked to him about it a little bit, but they're towards the beginning before the organizers from the high school showed up and really started doing their thing. There was a group of kids from, I believe it was Lincoln Middle School, who were about 11 to 13 years old, and they were standing up on the stage at the amphitheater in Old Town Square leading chants.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
They were a lot. I talked to a lot of middle schoolers there, and I think they didn't quite understand as much as some of the older high schoolers what the kind of legislative things that were going into the situation were, but a lot of what they were saying was that they are the targets of this violence. They are the people who are dying, and they kind of don't have the answers as to why adult voters and Congress people haven't taken steps to make sure that they're not dying at school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you just said, like, right there, they're trying to understand it. And the thing about it is politics is a very complex structure to where you can't just, like, get rid of something and expect it to just be gone. It's a very complex thing. And, I mean, I think that's great that 11-year-olds were there, but, I mean, what's the level of knowledge that was there, you know? Because obviously that's their parents' viewpoint that they're kind of protesting in favor for.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those younger kids that I talked to, obviously I asked them why they were at the protest, and they just kind of were disenchanted with allowing adults to take their safety into their hands, because they felt like they weren't sure why it was that they had left their safety in the hands of people who were experts or understood how the whole thing worked. And still, you know, the Columbine shooting was in 1999. And one of the comments that the main speaker made was that students have wanted reform since 1999 and have been waiting for it. And I think a lot of these younger kids understood that this has been happening for a long time, that there are people who are in legislative groups who are experts on this topic, and that they're still we're still seeing school shootings and seeing minimal effective reaction by legislatures and stuff like that. And so I think, you know, they wanted to learn, but they were kind of seeing that people who were experts weren't taking action.
I mean, the legislators can take action, but the thing about those kids is that a lot of those kids bully other children, and then those children grow up to be the school shooters. I mean, majority of school shooters are people who are bullied and outcasts. So it's not like legislation can fix it. They can, you know, raise screen checks and all do that to guns. But it's a lot about the mental makeup of these shooters. And a lot of those shooters get bullied at a very young age by these kids. And then so it's a catch-22, because you can ban guns, but you also have to protect bullying in schools and protect how these kids grow up.
And I did speak to a gentleman who was part of the counter protest, who was there with they had some NRA propaganda and stuff like that, who did make the comment that they felt that mental health was a more important path to go down, and that it still hasn't really been effectively addressed by legislative bodies. And I think really the thing, I talked to a lot of kids who were even part of the main protest who were saying that they don't really have an issue with weapons or with guns or assault rifles, but that, you know, no matter what the legislature is saying the issue is, they're not really making a movement. That a lot of the kids were saying they weren't just like anti-guns, get rid of guns. They just wanted somebody to do something, and they hadn't seen that happen.
Yeah.
That's definitely understandable. Well, thank you so much for going. We're actually going to be having a pre-recorded interview with a bunch of the audio from that event by Raven on Thursday. So stay tuned for that, because that'll be coming up soon. We are actually going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back pretty soon with Nick Baker, our sports director, is going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about Larry Eustacey, and I just saw him walk by, so he's here. Thank God. Cool. Anyway, you're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review, only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
Huh. Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I am Julia Battalese, one of two co-hosts. I'm in here with my co-host, Gabe Peterson.
Hello.
Hello. We also have JD Layton, our national news correspondent.
Yes.
Yes. We also have Nick Baker, our sports director, in here.
What's up?
And we have Raven Culler in the background.
Yeah,
our
I'm here.
Reporter in all caps, because we still don't have an official title. but we'll be talking about Larry Eustace. Just a quick recap. After a couple weeks, it has finally been announced that CSU men's basketball coach Larry Eustace is stepping down. According to ESPN, Eustace will be on, quote, paid leave by the university until June 30th, which is when he will formally resign. To get him out of his contract as well, CSU is expected to pay Eustace $750,000. His time at CSU had two other investigations into the way he treated his team, and his resignation comes after he had been yelling and cursing at players in and out of the locker room. There were responses on Twitter from some of his past players from CSU and Iowa State defending Eustace and his coaching style. Some of the controversy behind his stepping down is because of how he treated the players, and if that should be held against him. Some argue that Eustace's approach was not abnormal and often pushed players to work harder as opposed to deterring them. CSU is already considering five new candidates for their new head basketball coach, a few being Craig Smith, the head coach from South Dakota, Jeff Linder, the head coach from Northern Colorado University, and CSU interim coach Jace Hurl.
Cool.
I did it.
Yeah, so there's a couple things with that. Another one that they're considering is Becky Hammond, who's, you know, royalty here. Of course, that's mostly rumor. She's in the NBA as an assistant coach, but she's not a head coach. She'd like to get into that kind
of
field.
Did she go here?
Yeah, she was.
She did.
She was a star on the women's basketball team a while back.
Wow.
She's one of the numbers hanging in the rafters at Moby.
Oh, cool.
So she's a big deal. Jace Hurl, of course, is being considered. He's a great guy. He's done some all right things coming in, but I think they're gonna try to scorched earth this, you know, try to,
as they should,
yeah, try to get as far away from this, you know, situation as possible. So I love the guy, I really do. He's a great coach, has a great coaching style, but
he's part of the Eustace administration, so it's hard to fire your head coach and assistant coach and then promote the guy that's underneath both of them, because it's you know, you got to, I personally think you should just scorch earth the whole thing and start out with, I mean, if we got Becky Hammond, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
She's the Spurs assistant coach, right?
She is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's obviously very credible, very knowledgeable.
Please that bring would be some pop knowledge.
Some pop knowledge?
Yeah, dude, Greg Popovich.
Some pop knowledge.
Probably the best coach of all time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Easily.
In any sport. He's up there.
I don't know.
You could make the argument is the, you know.
It's difficult. It's like between 10. Him and Bill Belichick,
yeah,
honestly.
Right?
But going back to the Eustace thing, so he has paid leave until June 30th?
Yeah, so basically he was going to get that either way because they put him on the leave. And basically him resigning is beneficial for both the university and him. The university doesn't have to deal with the legal and PR nightmare of firing him. And he doesn't have that blemish on his thing that he got, you know, quote, fired.
Yeah.
And CSU was going to have to pay him $3 million over 3 years, whereas this way they only have to pay him $250,000 per year for 3 years.
Okay, that's not...
Which, you know, you don't want to do
that,
but they can afford that.
$3 million. I mean, for Eustace, he's probably going to take a nice little vacation, just go somewhere with 250 grand in his pocket as if he's not a millionaire already. But
exactly. Yeah, he did some good things for the program. He really did. Beforehand, there was not a single coach that had one losing record or less. They every single coach had at least one or more losing record. He only had the one, and that was this year.
So do you think the investigation into him is justified? I mean, do you personally think that he was a good coach that got a bad rap, or a bad coach who got what he deserved?
Somewhere in between. I don't think he was a bad coach. I don't think he was a bad person. I just don't think that his coaching style necessarily aligned. So, you know, you know, everyone who's played sports to the collegiate level has had two or three coaches like him. You know,
that
they're just passionate. And that's fine. That's great. But when your team's losing as bad as CSU has been this year, it's no longer, tolerable.
I think what you just said, every team has those two, three coaches that are in your face, like, get this done, like, get it right. Why aren't you working hard?
Right.
That's obviously how we coach. But you need that mediator. You need that guy who's on your side, who you trust more than anything, who's kind of like the almost like a good cop, bad cop kind of thing. Like, you need somebody to balance out. If Stacy is at 6 a.m. yelling and screaming and throwing basketballs at his players, is that necessarily bad? No, because it's sports. But you need the assistant head coach to kind of be the guy that the players can possibly go to and talk to about this. Because, I mean, collegiate sports is all about being competitive, and your coach – can be mad if he wants to be mad.
Right.
But he did have some pretty bad outbursts on the sideline that were kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, it becomes a bit of an issue at that point. And some players, respond better to being coddled. They want a coach that'll say, hey, no problem, just have fun. But then some guys, that just doesn't work. They need a guy who's yelling at them that they're like, I can't disappoint this coach again. So having a little bit of both, not a bad idea. But it sounds like Steve Barnes was almost exactly the same thing as him. And with Larry resigning, Steve Barnes isn't coming back either.
So, front runner. Who's your front runner?
So there's a couple people being talked about. There's a couple, guys who have been out of a job for a year or two that used to coach Power of Five schools. I'd love to see Becky Hammon. Right now, the front runner for me is Jace Hurl, but I wouldn't love to keep him in that position for a long time. He's a great guy, and I wish him the best, but I don't know if he's the best thing for this organization. They need to distance themselves from this.
What about those other two candidates? You said South Dakota, and you said UNC, Northern Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, they're both – I don't know a ton about either of them, but this is a really desirable place right now, so I think CSU could do a lot better.
Yeah, CSU's on the rise, for sure.
There's scandals all over college basketball, Arizona, Louisville – all over, Division One and the high tier colleges too. So, someone who was up there in that area and you see, I don't really want to go to Louisville. There's a lot of stuff in the water. CSU, we just had, an investigation about practice, but that's it.
That's
you
it.
It won't go any lower.
I mean, a team that made it to the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, and a team who, does get high recruits, because Colorado isn't obviously like a New Jersey or a California or a Texas for athletes and everything, but Colorado is obviously not a low-tier place for athletes.
Right.
So you can groom people to be a great, great team, and I think this would be a desirable job for a lot of people.
Yeah, and Jordan Brangers has signed a letter of intent to come here. He's the number one JUCO transfer this year.
Wow.
So that's exciting. He's going to be I think he's going to be a junior, so he has some experience and he obviously can play the game pretty well.
Awesome. Well, it'll be fun to see him for a year until he enters the draft if he can. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then we're actually going to just go into our weather segment because we got about 4 minutes till we got to get out of the studio.
Yeah, so it is a much better week than last week when it was cold and snowing and freezing. And today we are looking at 51 degrees as of right now. And as it goes into the night, it's going to be about mid-20s. And then when you wake up tomorrow morning on Wednesday, it's going to be around 37 degrees, but it's going to warm up to a high of 46, 20% precipitation, humidity at 50. And then Thursday when we have our next show, it will be a high 48, partly cloudy day, but no precipitation whatsoever. So it's a great day to drive around, listen to us on the radio, through the Radio FX app, on our website, through the live stream. And we hope to...
all of the ways.
Yeah, I'll give you the weather for this weekend on Thursday. JD.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a quick announcement. If you've ever been curious about how, radio works here at KCSU, you could always check us out on our Facebook page tomorrow, where we'll be doing an AMA, and which is an Ask Me Anything, and you can sort of, learn a thing or two about how things run behind the mic.
Yeah, I mean, if you're curious about me, Julia, JD, Raven, Nick,
don't stalk us. Just
there's
ask
no
questions.
Mystery here. There's
but we will answer every
JD.
Question for sure.
There's only JD.
JD's not part of it, but I'm just kidding. But yeah, that's really cool, JD. Thank you.
And then we're going to wrap up the show here. Thank you for tuning into the Rocky Mountain Review. Thanks to our reporters, Bjorn Larson, Raven Culler, Katie Otter. I was like, I know her name. and Joe Green, we also had Raven Color come on today. She'll be doing a lot of interviews in the next 2 days, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So thank you so much, our reporter in all caps. thank you to J.D. Layton, our national news correspondent. Thanks to Nick Baker, our sports director, for coming on and talk about you, Stacey. Thank you to Gabe Peterson, my co-host, and myself.
Thank you, Julia.
Every time.
So shameless. Stop thanking yourself.
I don't care. The Rocky Mountain Review is going to be back on Thursday. You can catch us here every Tuesday, Thursday for local, national, sports. What else do we have? Music, science, yeah.
We provide.
So just keep that dial locked until then.
Yep. Don't want to miss it. Every 4 to 5, every Tuesday, Thursday. You can catch the Rocky Mountain Review only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.